This is the Automotive Repair Podcast Network.
Welcome, everyone, to yet another episode of Diagnosing the Aftermarket at Izzy. I'm Matt Fonslow, and there is no spoon. That and more after a word from our sponsors, Napa Auto Tech Training and Pico Technology. Check out our Napa Auto Tech Facebook page to find out the latest Napa Auto Tech virtual class scheduled at a time that is convenient for you. Learn from the comfort of your home. Tired of guesswork in your auto diagnostics? Need to pinpoint faults quickly and accurately? PicoScope will turn your PC into a powerful diagnostic tool. See live waveforms from sensors, injectors, and ignition systems. See the problem? Solve it faster. Visit PicoAuto.com. That's PicoAuto.com. Yeah, so the quote I'm sure almost everybody, whether they've seen the film or not, is familiar with is The Matrix. And it was from a child, I think, known as a potential to be the one, which ended up being Neo, which is, I think, what, an anagram for one, the one. It would seem like I want to talk about The Matrix itself, the movie. It's not so much I want to talk about the movie. I love the movie. I really do. And I've seen it quite a few times. And I got to be on the level with you. I'm sure my idea here is nothing new. But for the many times that I've seen it until very recently, I haven't really even seen it that recently, to be honest. But just kind of thinking about it, conversations with really my wife triggered it. Friends just triggered an idea of the movie. So I almost want to assume everybody's seen the movie or knows about it. I don't know that I want to go into, no pun intended, rabbit hole of describing the movie or the precedence of it. Short of, we'll just say that if you have not seen the movie, or movies, but really the first one. I think we can get by with just the first one. The premise of the movie is that the human race has created artificial intelligence, which, don't get me going, it's a real umbrella term, but in this case, the machines took over and are using humans as energy sources. Somewhat silly when you get down to the brass tacks of physics with it, but to push forward the story, they're using entire crops of humans as batteries, little battery cells inside of pods that collect heat and for a source of energy. To keep humans alive longer and producing, they kind of entertain their brains in what's a simulation of life or the world, and it's called The Matrix. For the longest time, that is how I thought about The Matrix. Just, you know, a program that we're all uploaded into or connected to, our real bodies are in some pod. We're in kind of dreaming inside of this simulation. I thought really nothing much deeper than that. Maybe some obvious religious tones leaning towards, you know, I would say primarily Christianity. I suppose we could argue there's a little bit of Taoist type of leanings here and there, suggestions, but that's really as far as I ever took it. In discussions with my wife, especially to do with like substance use disorder, addiction, chemical dependency, I had a different idea. And honestly, spurned by previous episodes that I've recorded on this podcast, as well as just stuff I would talk about in other podcasts, and also comments on social media. And so, I mean, I'm not trying to dance or, you know, beat around the bush or dance around the idea. It's just, what if the Matrix is nothing more than our own personal social construct? Meaning, what if the Matrix, the movie, is a metaphor, that Matrix is a metaphor for our own ideas and beliefs? So that's what I got. Thanks for listening. I hope you got a kick out of it. And if you can help me flesh this out, I'd appreciate it. Just kidding. I'm going to keep rolling on this idea. The reason I guess I got to the chemical dependency part was that we have a situation where they're going to wake Neo up, right? Let's just relate it to substance use disorder. Let's say that the social construct is, this is how I cope. This is how I deal with the world around me and with a certain level of escapism, or at least something to help take the edge off of life. And whatever chemical that may be, it wouldn't even have to necessarily be like a drug, so to speak, but it makes it easier for conversations. That's what I use. That's what I do. So my belief system now is structured around the need for this tool, right? This cure. I think you've heard me say before that drugs are a cure. They work really, really, really well. They have some severe repercussions, but for many, you know, to solve some issues as a solution, they kind of work like gangbusters. You know, there's a price to pay. Let's just say the character Neo is wanting to wake up. His construct is no longer working for him anymore. That he doesn't believe he needs to use anymore. That he wants to live in the real world, if you will. No longer in this kind of this simulation or this happier place, easier to deal with place. And that's not to imply from the movie that the Matrix, that for everyone, the Matrix was so great. It wasn't. But the decision is made. And that's the kind of the red pill. I hate to say red pill anymore because, you know, Andrew Tate has kind of taken that term and hurt it, ruined it. In the movie, when presented a choice between a red pill and a blue pill, the blue pill is to just stay in that world, in this self-imposed cage, this belief of what you can be, what you can't be, what you can do, what you can't do. And the red pill is a choice, the choice to wake up, the choice to start living in, for lack of a better term, reality, the real world, at least start busting out of that cage or expanding the walls. I like it because the analogy, at least, and not because I came up with it, but just where it seems to work for me is that after the choice is made, it's not like Neo's life just got instantly better. It got worse. He wakes up in a pod, a vat full of goo, junk, his body atrophied, really hardly able to move, flushed out of that pod into water where he's going to drown and rescued by Morpheus and the crew. The reason I like that is a lot of times when people try to quit, whatever that coping mechanism is, and we are leaning towards more chemical dependency, it isn't like one day they chose to take the red pill and, oh, all right, I'm going to learn to cope otherwise. And the sun's brighter, the sky's bluer, and the clouds are whiter and fluffier, and oh my God, the birds are singing. No, their life gets worse. It's less colorful. And that's the thing, right? When he's on the ship, the hovercraft, Nebuchadnezzar, that the world is gray. Everything's gray and cold. The Matrix sounds pretty good to go back to color and warmth, at least a chance at warmth. The chance of real food, quote unquote, real food, right? Remember Cypher eating that steak? Like, I know that the steak isn't real, that the Matrix is telling my brain that it's juicy and delicious. Well, yeah, the red pill, the choice is now to eat the runny eggs. So food probably doesn't taste as good. Life isn't quite as bright, vibrant, and the atrophy may not be physical. It could be, depending on what the, you know, what was being used and how long and how, you know, intensity type, frequency intensity type stuff. But the coping mechanisms, the ability to deal, is severely atrophied. Like, a lot of times that's one of the reasons. I don't want to say everybody uses drugs to escape. Everyone uses drugs to not have to cope. A lot of them do, right? It isn't blanket statements. I'm not trying to say it's 100%. But many, many, many do to deal with life, to handle just anything and everything upsetting. Life is hard. Sometimes it helps to take the edge off, or it feels like it helps. But taken too far, you've kind of lost the tools, or maybe you never even had the tools to deal with life, to deal with its ups and downs. And a lot of people, they're not using to get high. They're not using to get euphoria. they're looking to just feel normal. And part of that's because of continued use and, you know, build up a resistance to it, if you will, but also just the need to feel normal, to be able to deal. That's all atrophied. And now you're trying to navigate the world feeling these feelings that you haven't had to feel, at least not at full intensity, for whoever knows how long. Neo kind of was a physical representation of that. His eyes hurt because he hadn't used them. That seems like a really real strong direct correlation. And then the building process. And then going into the Matrix, if you will, with Morpheus and learning that the rules were flexible. So our idea, the social construct we have created for ourselves, all these limits, I'm not saying any of us can jump across buildings, I guess, depending on how far apart they are. So theoretically, I guess we could, but not to that extreme, right? The amazing physical fighting displays or superhuman feats, maybe not necessarily possible in our world, but the reality is there's a lot of things that we limit ourselves on that are self-imposed. I can't. I could never. They won't let me. The world's against me. Something else is against me. Everybody's against me. A lot of times it ends up not the case that the biggest drag on progression, our evolution, whatever, is us. And Neo learns that he can do some pretty amazing things. And the more he lets go of this idea of what he can and can't do, the more he can do. I think that is a very important lesson for us. I seem to recall, I hate to say the numbers, I probably should look it up before even spouting it, but Navy SEALs, when they're going through BUDS or Hell Week, they kind of hit a wall. And they learn that that wall usually is self-imposed. That many of them are maybe only at about 70%, but they're ready to go ring the bell. They're ready to pull out. They're ready to give up. And that's, I guess, when some people hit FU mode and just find a whole nother level they didn't even know they were capable of. Many of us are capable of that. And many of us are hitting that wall that this idea of we can't do more, arguably long before we actually have hit such a wall. It could be physical, whatever that may be. And that's not trying to tell y'all to just, you know, you want to go run that mile, that the only thing holding you back is your brain. It could be, may not be. So, you know, be safe, but also just with life and our careers and what we can do. A lot of times we stop ourselves. We're the ones that throw up the roadblocks. We imagine the roadblocks. We imagine an unfairness that isn't unfair, and it may not even be there.
NAPA Auto Tech training sessions are being conducted day and night in a town near you. This training caters to every level within your organization, be it a mechanical assistant, a mechanical specialist, a technology specialist, or a driver safety calibration specialist. Imagine a one-stop shop training partner in NAPA Auto Tech that will lead your team to a path to greatness. Auto Tech's entry-level Build-A-Tech classes convert the untapped potential of your new hires into money-making mechanical specialists. Auto Tech's higher-level tech update classes introduce specialists to the world of ever-changing technologies, which prevents your shop from getting technologically stagnant. Remember, if you're not moving forward, you're falling behind. And, turning to the front of the store, the Auto Tech Service Advisor class is an awesome way to hone your client advocate skill set, ultimately benefiting the customer through an improved vehicle repair experience. But it doesn't stop there. Imagine an electric vehicle class that takes your specialist well past the mundane, yet necessary, safety topics. Well, it's here. Auto Tech's EV Ready Training is a week-long curriculum that takes participants through a hands-on experience involving hybrids and electric vehicles. The session kicks off with the use of PPE and proper tooling while touching on required OSHA regulations. Then, the students dive into the lab vehicles to gain knowledge of the common high-voltage components on EV and hybrid vehicles and their function. Attendees will be taken on a path exposing them to different electric vehicle manufacturers to compare component form and location. Additionally, information about Level 1 and Level 2 charging systems will be included, along with a quick look at DC to DC charging. The operation and maintenance of subsystems are explored, including the different modes of Tesla operations, and so much more. So what are you waiting for? Commit to taking your business to the next level with NAPA Autotech Training. Is your shop ready for the electric vehicle revolution? Don't get left behind. The Picoscope EV Kit is your all-in-one solution. Diagnose any electric or hybrid vehicle, from high-voltage batteries to complex communication systems. With guided tests and pinpoint accuracy, you'll tackle more jobs and boost your bottom line. This isn't just a tool. It's your future. Be the expert in EV repair. Visit PicoAuto.com to future-proof your shop today. That's PicoAuto.com.
I guess to fast forward a little bit to the scene with Neo is visiting the Oracle, very much at the behest of Morpheus, that he's sitting in that room with the young children, and particularly the boy bending spoons. And Neo picks up the spoon to try to bend it, and the boy essentially tells him, don't try to bend the spoon. That's impossible. Try to understand, try to realize, try to accept that there is no spoon and that you end up, you bend. I don't think it can be. It should be a very, very powerful statement that it's our beliefs, especially when it comes to like ourselves. I keep going back to social constructs. I just feel like that's what it is, and that we better understand social constructs. The easiest reference to a social construct I can think of off the cuff, and just even if it wasn't off the cuff, I think it's just the best demonstration of that is money. The $1 bill, the $5 bill, the $20 bill in your pocket. The only reason that's worth a dollar is because we all accept that it's worth a dollar. It's a piece of, nice paper, heavy duty. But the intrinsic value of it isn't a dollar. We just all agree that it represents the value of one US dollar. It's not the government. It's not any backing by the FDIC, nothing like that. We all agree that that is worth $1. That's why it works. Other social constructs being, because of this, I can't do that. Whatever that may mean, because I'm a woman, I can't come into this career dominated by men and hold my own. Maybe, right? Whether you think you can or can't, you're right. But why don't you find out? You're struggling with your ASC exams. I'm never going to pass that freaking A6, the electrical exam. Well, maybe. But if you go in just assuming you can't, are you stopping yourself? And I'm not just saying like, oh, well, just go in believing you can. What can you do to change that perspective? What can you do to change this idea that you cannot do it, that there's some limiting factor? And again, maybe there really is, but are you sure? Are you really sure? If you're looking at your shop going, we'll just never hit whatever targets. Are you sure? I mean, you could be right. Are you sure? What's stopping you? But like, what's really stopping you? Is it something that's tangible? Or is it decisions made based off of this idea that you can't do it? It just popped in my head and it's vague, right? It's just, I don't even know if there's a YouTube video of it. When I was a kid, one of the few shows that my mom would let us watch during the day was Kung Fu with David Carradine. My mom's grew up Catholic, so it's interesting that she'd let us watch that. But they would have these flashbacks. So, you know, the stories around this gentleman named Kwai Chang Kane, who is half white, half Chinese, and got accepted into a monastery where they studied Kung Fu for self-defense and exercise and whatever that. I guess we don't have to get into the history of Kung Fu. But during these flashbacks, he would remember these lessons from Master Po and Master Khan. And one of them was Master Po took him down to this, it looked like room with pools in it. And they had like a balance beam going across. And Master Po insisted that these pools were full of acid. And if I remember right, there was a skeleton laying in one of the pools where a past student had tried to walk across that beam and failed and fell into the acid to their own demise. The lesson was that Kwai Chang Kane, when it came time for him to try to walk across, couldn't, and he fell in. He lost his balance, fell into, didn't turn out to be acid, it was water. And the lesson, of course, was he had beat himself before he even tried. How many times has that happened to all of us? How many times do we have ourselves beat before we even give an honest effort? We have built up this social construct. We have built up this matrix in our brains of what we can and can't do and almost willed it into being, right? Self-fulfilling prophecies over and over and over again. So when can we start popping some red pills? When can we start making choices that we don't have to live in that matrix anymore? And understand, when you start taking the red pill, or you, it doesn't mean like you're popping them all day. The red pill could be a metaphor for just the decision, the choice, right? That's the matrix's big thing, is choice. Well, when you make the choice to not buy into your matrix anymore, to buy into your own self-imposed limits, again, it's not going to be like a ray of light hits you and I don't know what they're called, the sirens start singing and kind of like one of those almost like holy situations where you hear the singing and all that, the ahs. It probably won't be like that. It's actually going to suck. The initial change, the initial result of your choice is going to be worse or feel worse than what you already had. And that's a good thing, right? Because we can struggle a little bit now so we don't struggle a lot later. Whatever that may mean, right? That could be to do with, we'll just say, chemical dependency. It could be just how we think of ourselves or what we accept to be okay. There's a lot of people out there who are very, very mistreated in their relationships, and they believe that that is all they can do. That is the best they can do, whether it's a significant other, just good friends. Well, they wouldn't be good friends, but just friends in general, jobs, employees, clients. This is the best I can do. And it's not true. That's the matrix. The matrix is the cage, the web that you've created for yourself that's limiting you from maybe a little bit of initial suffering, but then a much, much wider world, a much, much bigger world, and better in general, like long-term improvement. And that can perpetuate itself, where maybe getting away from friends, quote-unquote friends, groups of people that mistreat you, to get with, it allows you at least the ability to find new friends who now maybe treat you the way you want to be treated. I mean, without going on a tangent or anything about, you know, how we should be treating people. I mean, really, Dutch Silverstein says just a lot of really, really good stuff. He stated on more than one occasion that, I mean, it is, you want to treat people the way you want to be treated, but for darn sure, don't you ever, ever, ever treat somebody the way you don't want to be treated. So I think leading with that and finding a new group of friends, or realizing that your significant other is not treating you well. And again, like, there's always two sides to a story, right? Are you, you know, what's your role? And this isn't saying just boom, end it, but maybe start sticking up for yourself, and then also learning what you need to do on your end to be a better spouse, right? Kind of like this last episode about being the best, or being the, dare I say, perfect, or I don't even want to say soulmate, but being Mr. Right or Mrs. Right over and over and over again. Well, that's what I mean. That's, do that. Make sure you're doing your part. And then if they're unwilling to, maybe believing that you deserve at least to be treated respectfully, cared for. Same goes for where you work. Are you being treated well? Are you being mistreated? Are you really being mistreated? Are you really being treated well? And are you doing your end of it too? Are you pulling your weight? Are you demonstrating that behaviors or value to be treated well, right? I think so much time and so much effort gets, even, well, it's not even effort being burned away. It's sometimes being avoided because we just like to twist if this, then that to what benefits us the most or reduces our effort as much as possible, right? So employers sitting there going like, well, if they would act like good employees, I would treat them like a good employee. And employees going, you know what? They wanted me to be a good employee. They would treat me like a good employee. And there, nothing gets done. No improvement. I hope you got something out of this. I hope that some of it resonated with you, like it's kind of resonated with me. Thinking about this now has me viewing the whole Matrix series differently. I'm kind of anxious to, or excited really, to find if there's other resources that kind of support this idea. And what have I missed? Or what are some better ideas? Or at least better fleshed out with it. But are you in a matrix? Yes. What does your matrix look like? And how many of the rules can you bend in your matrix? And do you need to get out of it? You may have choices to make, and just be prepared that the best choice to get out of that matrix may initially feel horrible. Maybe not horrible, but just not great. And it'll be worth it. So that is how I will leave you. Again, I hope you got a kick out of this. I hope you see what I'm playing at with this, what my angle is. I can't thank you guys enough for the emails and the messages and comments about episodes, questions, you know, to do with episodes or ideas for future episodes. It's great. Your questions are really good. A lot of them make me really have to go think. So yeah, you can email me at mattfonslowpodcast@gmail.com. You can also just private message me or instant message me on Messenger. I would just like to take a moment here to thank our sponsors, Napa Auto Tech Training and Pico Technology, and really thank the Automotive Repair Podcast Network. They have other shows on there. I don't really know what they are. I'm just kidding. One of them has Craig O'Neill. I like to talk smack about the guy, but he's pretty cool. Don't tell him I said that though. Seriously, don't tell him. Just goes to his rucking head. And Business by the Numbers with Hunt Demarest. It is not just for shop owners and managers. There's a lot of good content for all of us on there. And we can all learn a little bit more about marketing from Brian and Kim Walker. And there's also a Blitz, but it's not a football Blitz, with Chris Cotton. Give those guys a listen. Even Craig, check him out. I think you'll get a kick out of him. And yeah, thanks again, everyone. Yeah, go for the red pill. So yeah, check out the rest of the Automotive Repair Podcast Network. And until next time, take care.
You've been listening to Diagnosing the Aftermarket A to Z with Matt Fonslow on the Automotive Repair Podcast Network. Download our exclusive podcast app at automotiverepairpodcastnetwork.com because the best conversations in the industry start here. Want Matt to cover a specific topic? Check the show notes for his email. Your input matters.